You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. As promised on my last show, I'm going to do a wrap-up of the National Security Agency story that I really addressed two shows ago. I'm not going to post my notes for that, but I strongly recommend that you go to my companion blog for my show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And that will be the 185th show that has the notes. You'll see National Security Agency. I really thought about how to approach this subject of the NSA and what's happening. And the more and more I thought about it, probably the best way to get introduced to the subject is to actually look at or view a movie that came out 15 years ago, Enemy of the State, which you actually can view online. It's on YouTube in its entirety. I've also, at the very bottom of the videos that I've included in that rather extensive notes, and for first-time listener, let me explain. You listen to the show either when I'm broadcasting right now over KDUX Web Radio, but that's less than 1% of my audience. Most of the people that, like over 99.999% of my listeners, are listening at V podcast. Either they listen, they download it and listen to it at their convenience, or they listen to it streaming, again, when they have time. But what you do is you click on the link and you'll get, and there are about 45, 50 shows at the very top that I have links to, and you click on that link, and that will take you to Podomatic, where you'll have information on the stories or segments that I'm going to be covering. But underneath those links, and there are two set of links, you'll find my notes, and that has extensive information. Now, I'm not going to repeat the show 185, but I really wanted to summarize it. But I said, you know, there's a lot of information there, and I know people's time is valuable, and some people, frankly, are not as interested in this subject as I am, and some Americans are. So they have limited amount of time, and what I need, the reason I recommend seeing this movie, even though it's 15 years old, technology has dramatically advanced over those 15 years. And remember, this movie was before 9/11, because a lot of what the National Security Agency is doing is a direct result of that attack on the World Trade Center building, as well as the Pentagon, resulting in the deaths of over 3,000 people. Why that was the impetus for the growth in the National Security Agency and its capability to literally store everybody's emails, phone conversations, videos, tweets, photographs, all your business transactions, anything that you've done over the telephone or over the internet, they have a copy of it. They've intercepted. What they've done is they've built these large data centers. The biggest one, the newest one, is in Bluffdale, Utah. And they need these data centers because they're not only don't take it personally. They're not going after you. They're going after the communications of the entire world's population to the extent that they can get access to it and collect it and store it on these hard drives. And that means communications over the internet, as well as satellite intercepts, phone conversations over the telephone exchanges. They all have, the National Security Agency has been able to, and they use sophisticated technology, splitters, most of your communication is going over optical cables, and all they do is split the information and send it in mass or in bulk to be stored at one of these data centers. Now, they have sophisticated software to get at the information, but the first step is simply to collect the information and store it on hard drives at these data centers. And the typical reaction of many Americans, because they really haven't thought this through, and that's why I'm recommending that they first look at this movie. I'm not going to give the movie away, but the only warning to you is that was 15 years ago. It was before 9/11, before the so-called war on terrorism. And what's dramatically changed, even though the National Security Agency, together with the Central Intelligence Agency, the FBI, and other law enforcement organizations, both in the federal government and state and local, failed. You know, I relied on the government, as did most Americans, to protect me against terrorist attacks. Although I've in the past traveled abroad, I haven't been abroad in many, many years for various reasons. But you would expect in your own home country, especially in New York City, that the government, using various technologies, software, especially the National Security Agency, because they are tasked with gathering this information, collecting this information, to prevent just such an attack that occurred on 9/11. So what happened after 9/11 is Congress gave them a lot of money, which meant more people, and they could hire a lot of contractors, large corporations, such as Booz Allen, where Edward Snowden was hired, and he was the gentleman that's really I consider him a whistleblower, although he really, you know, some people, you can argue that. I don't consider him a hero. I don't consider him a traitor. What he did was confirm what many people, including me, suspected that the National Security Agency was doing. It didn't surprise me that it didn't surprise me that they did have the capability to do exactly what they were doing. But until Snowden released this information, this is what's very, very important. That was just speculation on my part, because every time one of the directors of the National Security Agency would testify in an open hearing in front of Congress, whether it's in the House or the Senate, they would emphatically deny that we are not spying on the American citizens. That is illegal, and for us to do it, we need a warrant. Sounds good. Oh, terrific. We're strictly spying on or intercepting the communications, the messages of foreign nationals, mainly those that are a threat, either directly or indirectly, to United States citizens and property, both in the United States as well abroad. And that was my understanding of their mission. At least that's what, for public consumption, they were saying. But why they were saying it, they were collecting everybody's information, not only of foreigners, both friends and foes of the United States, friends being our allies, for example, in Great Britain, Germany, France, as well as our enemies, whether it's communist China, North Korea, you pick it. So again, I'm not against having a national security agency trying to intercept messages, both coded and uncoded, or in the clear. And I think that view, I believe, is widely held by the American people. However, where I draw the line, and I think the majority of American people draw the line, and this is the big proviso, as long as you're not spying on American citizens in the United States. I'm not happy that they do it abroad, but I can understand where, you know, if you're abroad making telephone conversations, and if they're intercepting most, if not all, of those telephone conversations or internet activities, then you're going to be picked up. Now, because of the release of slides and the continued release of additional information, I am convinced, and so are many, many people are convinced, that the National Security Agency has been lying to Congress and has been lying in turn to the American people and is spying on American citizens. And what they're doing now, they don't consider an intercept of a message until someone actually reads it or views it, if it's a video or a photograph. That's their rather weasel word way of saying, well, we don't read or view your email or listen to your telephone conversations. What they're not telling you is they've collected all your telephone conversations, all your emails, all the videos, photographs you've put up or used the internet. Anything, anytime, for example, this show is going over the internet. The National Security Agency will have a copy of this show on their servers in Bluffdale. You better believe it, especially given the title, because the title includes, at least at one time, the names, the project names of secret projects that were directly involved in one fashion or another in collecting this information. It wasn't initially to be known by the public. And for many years, except for a few writers, namely James Bamford, is probably the most famous, very little was known about the National Security Agency. I would suspect, except to very recently, probably less than 5% of the American people had any idea what the National Security Agency did. Now I would say more and more Americans are really focusing on this, and I think we'll be focusing in it not only this year, but next year. I think this is going to be a very hot political topic, because what you're talking about is the massive invasion of the privacy of all Americans. And, you know, you have the government estimates of the U.S. population, according to the Census Bureau, are somewhere north of 318 million people. Many of those are illegals. But you have at least 318 million people in the United States. The overwhelming majority of those people are law-abiding citizens. They respect the law. They respect the rule of law. They support their police departments. And they support the National Security Agency and the Central Intelligence Agency, as long as they play by the rules. And the key rule, the important rule, is you don't invade the privacy of U.S. citizens. It's in the Constitution, folks. It's the Fourth Amendment. You should not be subject to unreasonable searches and seizures unless a court has issued a warrant to various law enforcement department, and that warrant has to be specific as to the person, the location, and what exactly the criminal activity is, and what specific information you need to gather. The National Security Agency cannot, on a wholesale basis, collect and store the communications of the American people when they use the internet or their telephones. And that's what they're doing. They're collecting that information. They're storing that information. I think there should be no argument there. My concern is, with some notable exceptions, most of the talk show hosts and the people that comment on this are not focusing on that fact. Which amazes me, because if you carefully read the slides, these are top secret slides, and I've included it in the notes to that, show 186. Let me clarify that. I'm looking at the notes right now for show 186, and I have it there. And it's a lot of information. But I deliberately put the information in some kind of order. And really, the slides are to get your attention as to what they're doing. And there are a number of programs that they're using. The key one is PRISM. But what I'm hearing when I listen to talk radio is there tends to be, I would say, an over-focusing on the metadata for telephone conversations. And I don't want to minimize that. That metadata can get you a lot of information. Because if they know who you're phoning, and the example I've used before is, let's say you're an alcoholic. I've worked for an alcoholic, and I know this is true. They drink a lot of alcohol. And I'm not talking beer. I'm talking the hard stuff. So what do they typically have to do? They have to buy liquor at a liquor store. And some people will order that. They'll call the liquor store and have the liquor store deliver it. Some will go to the liquor store, use their credit card, or pay by check and buy their liquor. Some will buy it online, but that's what's going on. So if they have intercept information, for example, on your phone call, that you're phoning such a number, let's say once a week, they can quickly cross-reference that telephone number and determine it's a liquor store. Now, I don't drink alcohol. Well, let me back up a minute. I want to be real clear on this. The last time I've had any drinks of alcohol, and I'm including wine, champagne, at least 30 years ago. I just decided one day to stop for various reasons. And it's not that I'm not an alcoholic, never really had an alcohol problem. I just said it's a waste of money. It's a waste of my time. I don't, to the extent that I drink it, about half the time I'd have a headache. Sometimes I'd have a hangover. Occasionally, if I drank really too much, I might even get sick. So I decided one day, enough is enough. I'm not going to drink any alcoholic beverages, and I haven't had a drink in 30 years. Now, when I was young, a teenager in college and graduate school, even when I was in the Air Force, I would drink. And I seldom, if ever, would drink at home. Usually, it was social occasions. It was either at a bar or a party or a reception. I would have one or more drinks. And that's most Americans. But if you're an alcoholic, you have different behaviors, what you drink every day, and usually to excess. And as a result, you drink a lot of liquor, and you'll probably die of kidney failure, or cirrhosis of the liver. And they need that alcohol. And I very distinctly remember working for someone, very successful individual, and when he was sober, a very nice guy. And I liked the guy. I still like the guy. The problem was, starting around noon, he would go to lunch, and he was such a nice guy, he would invite his employees, and then he would have typically three or four or more, but at least three or four double whiskeys. I forget what he drank, but he had doubles and a minimum of three to four at lunch. Now, I always declined. He'd offer to buy, but I had a job to do, and at that time, I'd already quit for many, many years. So I said, thank you very much, but he bought lunch. And I typically would get either iced tea or Diet Coke. Now, somewhat strayed, my point is this. Just by having the metadata of a telephone conversation, they can develop a profile of who you typically call. Let's take another. So in this example, if you're an alcoholic, you're probably calling a liquor store. Or if you're not calling him, you're driving, and they're going to see also your credit card transactions as well as your financial statements, that you're written checks for this liquor store. Now, let's take another example. Let's say you're having an affair. You're married and you're having an affair. So they're going to see telephone conversations to your spouse, but they're also going to see telephone conversations to whoever you're having an affair with. And they can put two to two together. Why is this, let's say it's a man, why is this person calling this other woman? You know, throughout the week or the month, why is he calling a motel or a hotel in his local city or area when he has a home? So metadata is important. You can learn a lot of information just by the metadata. So I'm not brushing away. I agree metadata on telephone conversations are important. But that has become a distraction. That has become a point of focus on many people that are commentating or giving their opinion on this. And that's part of the problem. But what seems to be glossed over or not focused on, and it really somewhat surprises me, is they're missing the bigger picture. That's just the tip of the iceberg, folks. They have a copy of that telephone conversation or financial record, that credit card transaction, or photographs, videos, tweets, post on Facebook. They have copies of it. Now, did they single you out to get the copy? No, they didn't. They're collecting this information in bulk. What that means is, it's like think of the internet for a minute as a fire hose. Maybe that's not a good example, but information is flowing over fiber optic cables. And what you can do is get all the and let's say it's supposed to go to from point A to point B. All the information from point A to point B is going to point B. But before it arrives at point B, all that information is also diverted or split. But all the information is split, and it goes to one of these data centers, such as the new one at Bluffdale, Utah. And it's stored on a hard drives, huge hard drives, servers in the data center. That's step one. That's just the collection and storage step. And that's a lot of information because they're storing it every single second of the day. And it's not just United States citizens. It's everybody in the world that's sending messages over the internet or making phone calls. Are they getting 100%? No, but they're probably getting way over 95%. Now, you're probably scratching your head. Well, then, okay, I can see they're collecting it. And I vaguely understand you're telling me they've stored it. It's like a library that orders books and they put it on the stacks. But and that's probably a better example. They're getting all your emails, videos, photographs, phone conversations, business transactions, anything you've done over the internet or anything you've done through a phone. They're collecting it and they're storing it, just like a library orders books and puts it on a stack or a shelf. Has anyone read it or listened, or let's say read the book in a library? No. Students have to come in and search for it based on, for example, the title of the book, the author of the book, the subject matter of the book. So you need information as to what is in the collection of, and if it's a library, the collection that you have. And all libraries have it. I'm literally downstairs from the library. Above my head and maybe 100 feet from me is the Richland College Library. And they have stacks of books. They have a fairly good library. I'm not totally happy with it. I've been spoiled. For example, when I went to the University of California at Berkeley to do my graduate work in economics, they had not one library. They have the main library, but they have many libraries, some specialized libraries. So I somewhat got spoiled because I literally could almost find anything, not quite. And this was many, many years ago. I'm sure they've really advanced since I've been there. Because when I was going there, we had catalog. You had catalog drawers that you would pull out searching for information. So the step that I think, and this is the reason why I don't think many of the talk show hosts have really grasped this, is not only have they collected and stored that information, they have computer software that enables them to retrieve the information on literally thousands, tens of thousands of hard drives or servers. And what that means is you have what's called entities. Entities could be a company, it could be a place, it could be an institution such as a college, a city, it could be an individual. You're an entity. Entities have attributes or properties, and you want to look for unique identifiers or unique properties or attributes of an entity or a person. Let's take myself for an example. I have a name, first name, middle name, last name. I have a date of birth. I have a Social Security number. I have a driver's license number for Texas. They have a photograph based on that Texas license number. I have a car that has a license plate that's uniquely tied to me. That's my car. I'm the owner or the lessee, in this case, of that car. They have that. They have my telephone number. They have my address. And that's just for starters. They have your email address. Just based on that information, they can do searches or queries, which is a search of that collection, and start building what's called a dossier. Think of it as a big file. Now, they don't use files anymore. That's the old technology. That was how it was done 15, 20, 30, 40 years. It's not that those files don't exist, but they're bulky. That's why I'm saying when you go to that movie, and that's probably the best way to start appreciating what I'm trying to get across here, you will find that technology is 15 years old. That was about, the movie came out about the time the web or the internet was taking off. They've made major strides now. So you have computer software that can go and search those servers and pull out more information. Let's take my case again. What can it get? It can get all my emails. It can get all my videos. It can get all my podcasts. It can get all my financial transactions. It can get my bank records. It can get all my criminal records. I don't have any other than some traffic tickets. It can get my where I went to school. What were my grades? It can go into libraries and see what library books I have taken out, both at Richland College as well as the Dallas Library, Public Library. Those are just starters. Now, if you're a law-abiding citizen, are they going to do that to you? Most likely not. It's just going to sit there. Now, here is the problem. But you got to understand, they're collecting it, they're storing it, and they have the capability, if they want to pull out and build a dossier on you. In other words, pull all those records together. Now, when would they do that? When would they do that? When you become a target, just like the individual in that movie became a target. And I haven't seen the movie in a while, but there's a scene where apparently an intelligent analyst comes into a room where they're discussing what's going on, and he hands the person that's targeting someone a file that has some records in it, and he starts looking at it. Well, they don't need a hard copy record anymore. The analyst will start making queries, and it's not just one. I just gave you the initial query to start the ball rolling, and they're going to look at all that, and most of it is, call it innocent, there's nothing there, but there is. For example, looking at my videos, you could conclude that I'm interested in art. I am. Big deal. But that's important information. What is it? What are his hobbies? What is our interest? And you could get a complete record of my telephone calls, who I've telephoned. That's important. And the metadata. You see, what they do is they're trying to build a network. If you become a target, anyone that you've communicated with could also become a target. Now, how do you become a target? Obviously, if you're a terrorist or you're committing some criminal, serious, felonious criminal activity, let us say trying to overthrow the government of the United States or to do physical harm to someone in the United States, guess what? You could become a target. That's sort of the obvious way. And many of you say, well, that'd be legitimate. But did they go to a court and get a warrant for this? No, they didn't, and they won't. Right now, all they're doing is gathering in a file or dossier information to make a determination what you're doing. For some reason, you have been viewed as a threat. You have some so-called suspicious activities. It might just be saying, like I'm doing, my opinion on a radio show. Now, what's the danger? Besides the fact that they've already violated, let's say they did this, for whatever reason, I became a target. I haven't engaged in any criminal activity, but for some reason, I am a target. And it could be anyone. And many innocent people can become targets. And if you don't believe me, there are people that every time they try to fly a plane, they have problems because they're confused with someone else. A lot of that's going on. Because there are people that have, believe it or not, even though I have a rather unique last name, there are more than one people that are named Raymond Pronk. Most of them are in Holland, but there are other Raymond Pronks out there. Now, when you add my middle name, that really narrows it down. And when you, where it was born and all that, it quickly narrows it down. And that's what you want. You want identifiers or attributes, properties of an entity or an individual, for example, to be quickly to narrow it down, so when you search this huge, huge collection, you start pulling out my emails, my videos, my photographs, my communications, phone calls, and I'm talking not only the metadata, I'm talking the actual phone call. They have that capability. But at that point, they have broken the law. They've invaded my privacy. It's an unreasonable search and seizure of my records. They didn't ask for a warrant. and you won't know about it. In most cases, you'll never know about it. But they've gone in and done it. It might not be you or me, but they've done it to innocent Americans. You better believe they've done it. Are they going to admit it in an open hearing? Absolutely not. They're going to deny it till the cows come home. Now, here's where you need to extend it. And I'm going to link it to, I'm looking at the time. I was going to do a short wrap-up, and now I'm doing a longer wrap-up. But I really wanted to understand what's going on. What you got to understand is many Americans today simply do not trust their government. They do not trust their government. And the way to make this kind of concrete, and I'm going to go through because we have all ages in terms of the audience here. Did you trust Lyndon Baines Johnson when he was president? I didn't. I absolutely did not trust that gentleman. Did you trust Richard Nixon when he was president? I didn't. Lyndon Baines Johnson was a Democrat. Richard Nixon was a Republican. Johnson was considered a liberal or progressive Democrat. Richard Nixon, although a Republican, was a progressive, and the left didn't like him. But there were large percentages of the population, if you ask that question, do you trust your government when, for example, Lyndon Baines Johnson was president, would say absolutely not. And I will say it both for LBJ and Richard Nixon. Now, I'm not going to go through all the presidents, but I'll bring it up to date. Did you trust George W. Bush when he was president? I didn't. I did not. He was a progressive Republican. He said he was a compassionate conservative. That was to confuse you. He was a progressive Republican, a big believer in government intervention and growing the size of the government. Now, I didn't trust him. He lives in Dallas. He's my neighbor. I'm joking about that. He's in Dallas, but we don't live in the same neighborhood. What about Barack Obama? I definitely don't trust him. Now, what I mean by that? All you need to do is get someone in power. It could be a Republican or a Democrat, a liberal, a conservative, a neocon, whatever. The party affiliation is not important. To some extent, the political philosophy or ideology does, because one of the common denominators of those four presidents that I named, they are all believers in big interventionist government statism. They all grew the size of the federal government in terms of its scope and to make it real clear, intervention into the economy in the United States, as well as military intervention abroad. All four of them. And they have a lot of power. And if any of these presidents directed the National Security Agency to target someone, they're going to salute and do that. Now, will it be as direct as I just said? No. And here's the danger of this. What the National Security Agency has right now is the capability, and I'm coining this phrase, to create an instant tyranny, an instant tyranny. All you need is a unscrupulous political leader as president or someone under him to give the order to the National Security Agency to target one or more individuals or groups, and they're going to salute and they're going to do it. And they have that capability. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a tyranny. Did they get a warrant? No. Do they have really grounds to do this? No. If they did, they could get a warrant. Anyone, American citizens, whether they're here or abroad or anyone in the world, can become a target. And there's no guarantees or protections that this is done legally. This is what I would call an abuse of power. We've already seen questionable behavior in terms of the IRS regarding letters of proving certain statuses of conservative Tea Party groups and delaying the passage of that. I'm of the firm belief, ultimately, that this was very much a political directed operation. Now, that's somewhat speculation on my part, but someone had to tell those IRS employees to delay and delay and delay the approvals that these Tea Party organizations and conservative organizations. They were trying to get approved as a 501c3 organization so they could solicit funds to get their ideas across. And that was delayed and delayed and delayed. That's a political decision. That's political interference. Now, President Obama said, we need to get to the bottom of this. Someone fairly high up, and I mean a political appointee, was involved in this. And I think the White House was involved with this. And I would not be surprised if the president is involved in this. And they're dragging their feet on this. They're stonewalling. We really need another whistleblower to blow the whistle on this. It's not in the news, you notice? There's no stories about the IRS scandal. That's one of many scandals, but there's no stories in the news today about that. Absolutely none. Now, what I'm trying to get across is what the National Security Agency has the capability today with. I have no doubts about this. It's to target anyone, American citizen, foreign citizen, anyone in the world, because they already have this collection of information, all your phone calls, not just the metadata, the actual phone calls, all your photographs, all your videos, all your financial transactions, all your bank transactions, all your tweets, all your posts to Facebook. Now, some of you are saying, man, I don't know how they do this. Well, I'm not saying trust me. That's why I'm giving you this information. Get your own conclusions. Form your own conclusions. Do your own homework is what I say. Because if you do your own homework, that's the inescapable conclusion. There's no doubt that they can collect it and store it. And as far as I'm concerned, there is no doubt. If you're going to collect it and store it, what's the next step? You want to be able to pull out information for specific individuals. It could be an individual, it could be a company, business, an organization. That's why I use the phrase entity. All of those are entities. Believe me, it's called data mining. It's done already in the commercial businesses. It's a little different than your regular databases, because what you're doing is you're accumulating massive amount of information from a number of databases. It's not just these intercepts. They also have access to many databases, largely business organizations, but to some extent governments, such as the licensing bureau where you get your license. So once you become a target and they've assigned an intelligent analyst to go after you, guess what happens? That gentleman or lady sits at a desk and starts putting in information to get queries. They'll do it by, for example, if they're going after me, my email address, my driver's license, my physical address, my date of birth, anything where my name appears or similar to my name. Now, they're not doing this just for the fun of it. What they want to do is build a dossier, pull out all that information, and start building a file on you. Now, let's say you're not engaged. You're not a terrorist. You're not engaged in criminal activity. And that's the overwhelming majority of American people. I would say conservatively over 300 million. Why would they do this? You're probably saying, well, why would they target me? Usually they're trying to get what's called leverage, which is a polite way to say information that's embarrassing to you or could be construed as embarrassing to you. And they want to intimidate you and shut you up. You know, I do a daily, on the weekdays, a daily talk show. And I'm highly critical of both Democrat and Republican politicians. And if one of those individuals has the power to do this, they could try to get leverage to shut me up. Now, you might say, well, you know, I live a simple life. Well, there are people involved with the Tea Party. Their complaint is the government is out of control. They're spending too much money. That's the major complaint of the Tea Party. What they're asking for is the government to decrease their spending and balance their budget. I don't consider that radical. I consider that normal. And that's the majority of people. But if you're outspoken about this and you get a person in power that is willing, that doesn't have integrity, doesn't have character, a person that lies to you, and we've had presidents that have lied to us, not just Obama. Lyndon Johnson used to be called Lying Lyndon. He also used to be called Landslide Lyndon, where he really stalled an election to become congressman in the first place. So it's not new that we have politicians lying in a big way, and it's not new to have presidents to use to the fullest extent possible. If they wanted to go after someone, they did it, and most of them get away with it. See, that is the danger of the capability that the National Security Agency has today. And all they're looking for is something that would shut you up. That's embarrassing. It doesn't have to be criminal. You have an alcohol problem. Or you were growing up, you were arrested and convicted of use of drugs. It could be anything, folks. Use your own imagination. That's why I say, first look at this movie, Enemies of the State, just so you get an idea. But keep in mind, that's 15 years ago. Technology, both hardware and software, have dramatically increased in the power it gives an organization such as the National Security Agency. And the reason why this will be a political issue in this election and in future elections is our elected representatives in Congress and in the Senate should be outraged about this, should be demanding answers and shutting this down. And some of them are, but the majority are not, specifically the leadership of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and those that chaired the Intelligence Committee and that are on the Intelligence Committee. Those are our elective representatives that should have stopped this. They didn't stop it. They gave them the money and the people and the assets and said, go to it. We don't care about the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. We don't want a repeat of 9-1-1. And that's how they justify this. Yet when asked, give us examples of where you've presented the terrorist attacks, they come up with very few. Did they prevent 9-1-1? They didn't. They're part of the intelligence failure. So that's my wrap-up. And it's really, I'm going to have other shows in the future on this, because this show, the National Security Agency, will be the subject of many, many news stories in the coming year. Mark my words. And I wanted to start the year with hitting this, because we have not heard the last of this. Because what's happening is more and more Americans, including politicians, have become sensitive to the fact that the American people are getting real mad about this. They don't like their privacy being invaded just as a congressman or senator doesn't. And this smacks of tyranny. This enables someone that's reprehensible, a president and people under him, to use this capability, and that is tyranny. That's why it's an instant tyranny. I'm going to wrap up the show now. I was going to go, and I'll do this next time, just to tease you a little bit. My next show will be on the fact that, guess what? 42% of Americans are now declaring that they're independents, according to a Gallup poll. That's more than the Democratic Party with 35% and the Republican Party with 25%. And it's actually harder if you look at the quarterly information. So I'm going to go over that. What I see happening is a formation of a third party, because more and more people have seen the fact that neither political party are listening to the American people and are not addressing such as the scandal, and I think it's a scandal, at the National Security Agency. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I hope the show has been educational, enlightening, and maybe even entertaining. Thank you. Have a great day. And now back to the music.